It's time for Viewmaster on 95BFM.
Sure is. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a bit tired, but, you know, I'm just here doing it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
We're out of bed.
Just fulfilling your obligations.
Yeah.
It's fun, watching lots of television.
I've been really keen with this episode because I really like the show that we started watching. I watched the new Netflix show that everyone's talking about, Sex Education, because, you know...
You've been waiting
for that, yeah.
Haven't you?
I played it for a while.
I did not know that was coming. And like, I know everyone's watching it. I know I've started to talk about lots of like really mainstream stuff, but this is a really good show and I really enjoyed it. Basically, the premise is Asa Butterfield plays Otis, who's the child of a...
What's his name?
Otis.
No, what's his name? The actor?
Asa Butterfield.
Asa Butterfield.
He is in Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Such a great name.
I think he was the orphan in Boy in the Striped Pyjamas.
Oh.
I think he was in Boy in Striped Pyjamas as well as a child. I watched an interview with him. We talked about it. And he's also... he plays lots of orphans, apparently. It's the thing he does. It's like his shtick.
He's got those gooey eyes.
He's got orphan face. He does. He plays lots of orphans. Anyway, so he's the child of Gillian Anderson, who's his mum, who's a sex therapist in the show. And he basically... the premise is that his high school, he's 16, he's in, what's that thing that British people do? That
oh
we
my
don't
God,
do?
That's Gillian Anderson. I only just realised that now.
Man.
Well, I was trying to think where you were from. I thought it was like, are you being served or something? No,
and
my
Gillian
God,
Anderson looks great with grey hair.
Yeah.
She should keep that hair. She looks great.
She's done a couple of successful sort of forays into English, because it's set in England, isn't it?
Yeah, 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 set in England.
What thing that British people do?
GCSEs, like the year 12 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's set in that time, like the same time period like Skins is set in when they're at high school and stuff. And everyone's having sex and they need advice from this guy who's the kid of a sex therapist. But shock, twist, plot twist, whatever, he
is
totally sick. No, he's totally sexually inept. He doesn't even know how to masturbate and he's 16 years old. So the show is like very frank about sex and like relationships and very honest. And it's cool because there shouldn't be this taboo around sex. And I think this show like is really trying to break down those walls. And I just really, really liked it. Like, it's funny. It's got some heart. It's got some really sad moments, but some really light moments. The friendships they have is really cool. I just like really enjoyed this. I watched it within 2 days.
It was made by Netflix, wasn't it? Or was it sold to Netflix sort of thing?
I can never tell. Like, it might have been like a BBC thing, but
do we really care?
No, we don't. Because it was good.
And it's like, on Netflix. That's what you saw.
It's on Netflix, and it's easy to watch. And I watched it within 2 days, and it's like 10 hours of programming. So that's like,
wow.
I love a binge.
Yeah, no,
I love a binge.
Great.
You didn't get to a certain episode and go, do I have to listen to it?
I got to episode 3 and it was like midnight and I was starting to fall asleep, but episode 3 like was really sad, so I kind of just got a bit emotional and kind of got really stuck in. And
That's what you like, and you like the
I like the emotional parts. But yeah, so it also follows his friends Maeve Wiley and his other friend Eric, and they have much more interesting story arcs than he does. So Eric is a gay kid, a gay black kid, and he's the second gay kid in the school, and the other gay guy is like super popular and like really cool, and this kid Eric plays like the French horn and no one likes him and everyone calls him Trombona, which is, you know, a very very
that's cruel.
Yeah, but like, you know, expected. It's not like it's not a smart nickname, you know. But he basically deals with his like not coming out, but his
school though, isn't it? It's not always the smartest nickname. You know,
they just stick.
I meant to skirt through school with Michael Fisher and Michael. And I used to sit there and go,
Michael Fisher and Michael.
Like, that's the best anyone could come up with. And I was like,
I don't get it.
No, Fisher and Michael's a brand, you know. That's all the kids could figure out that rhymed, you know.
I got called Sam Snot because my last name sounds like Snot if you say it too fast. So it's like Sam Snot. I was like, sick.
Yeah, they're gonna do that. They're gonna run that together.
Oh yeah.
If they can round it up to Snot, they will.
It's right. It was a lot smarter than Homo, so like I was happy with that.
texted and said the music in it is great.
Yes, it has a really cool soundtrack. So Asa, kind of one of his personality quirks, because he's not actually the most interesting character, I don't think. But you know how they kind of just give people quirks to be more interesting. He collects records and he loves like old school tunes, and that does just play really cool tunes. And the thing with the show, it's like, all the tunes are from like the 80s and 90s, maybe even just 80s, I didn't really like look into it too much, but it's set in 2018, and everyone looks like they're from the 80s, and all the houses are really 80s aesthetic, and all the cars are from the 80s, so like it's really, really anachronistic, and it's really, really cool, like it looks cool, it's a visually like quite interesting show, but you know, it deals with like cyberbullying, and like sharing of nude photos over text and stuff, and like the show is definitely taking place in the modern age, and talking to a modern audience, and really like focusing on sex and relationships in a modern age.
Yeah.
It's quite cool. I really like it because like it does do like the kind of like problem of the week kind of format where, you know, he's got to solve, he meets a new client every week and he's got to solve their problems kind of thing. So you get to see like...
A new client being like someone else at school.
Yeah, someone else at school that needs like, sorry, he calls them clients.
Yeah,
someone else at school that has to deal with like sex relationships and stuff.
So
and
is he like taking tips off his mum?
Yeah, so he's kind of absorbed all this information from his mother because his house is also like full of all this like sex diagrams and like... carvings of penises and like all this stuff. Like it's real wild.
And
like
she has multiple lovers who just come to and fro.
Oh yeah.
He's like, it starts off with him meeting like, Dan. Like g'day, hello. He's looking for the bathroom sort of thing. Yeah. And he walks in.
He instantly prescribes the guy with having mummy issues, and that's why he's banging his mum. Like it's like it's a whole thing. Like it's instantly looks like kind of engaging and kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
And his bully comes over for a school project and ends up like smoking a J with his mum and like they're hanging out on the deck and what Annie calls her
hot witch,
a sexy witch.
Your mum's a bit of a hot witch.
It's just great. Like it's just the show is just like really off the wall. I definitely recommend it to everyone. Like I heard mixed reviews and by heard mixed reviews I was told by someone there was mixed reviews and I was like, okay, sweet, let me find these mixed reviews. So I put up an Instagram story last night, being like, hey, who's watched the show? Who hated it? Who loved it? Like DM me. No one hated it. Like everyone that followed me or like replied to my story was like, yeah, no, I loved it. It's great. Like you should definitely like watch it. And I was like, bro, already been there, already done that. Like binged it. Like what are you doing? Like you need to watch some more.
Go watch it.
So yeah, I recommend it. I'm not gonna say it's been like the top TV show this year, but it's definitely like up there on like what's been out for January. And I was pleasantly surprised.
I did not think straight away that it would be that it was set in England. It looked like an American sort of. You know, like set American high school sort of vibe, you know?
Well, someone said it's like they've Americanized British culture. And I was like, I can see it. I can see what you mean. But also like, yeah, I don't know. But also like, it's kind of cool. Like it's not set in any time period. It's kind of not really set in any place either. Like you just, you kind of latch onto the British village vibe, but like it could be set in like an American village and they just have British accents.
Sure.
Like, you don't really know.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, and I'm just into it, so go watch it, everyone.
That's right on. Sex Education.
Yeah.
It's 86 on Rotten Tomatoes.
86.
What you might want to do, you might want to temper it if there's youngsters in the room, because it gets pretty grubby.
Oh, yeah, no, it's 16 plus, don't watch it in front of... There is like, full-on... there is full genitals in this show. Like, it's one of those.
There is full genitals in the show. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye.
That was Viewmaster on 95BFM.
New Zealand, land of pioneers.
Kate Shepherd, that Timaru bloke that invented planes. Rutherford split the atom.
And every morning, we're the first country to wake up, see the sunshine, and need a bloody coffee. For that, we've got Derek Townsend. Caffeine's Edmund Hillary, bringing New Zealand the Cafe Society with DKD in the 80s, visionary inventor of the flat white, and since 1997, he's been roasting New Zealand's best coffee. Carajo's Coffee Company, coffee with a conscience. Carajo's.co.nz.
Next!
St. Pete, my man!
Welcome to the afterlife. There's been a little issue with your paperwork. Under best thing you've ever done, it says had a gelato at the movies in Devonport.
Yeah!
It should be something uplifting, moral, goodly.
Have you tried their gelato?
The Vic Devonport. Fresh gelato, quality coffee, a beautiful cinema. Your ideal summer getaway destination. The Vic Devonport. Return ferry trip and movie ticket combo only $19 for an adult or $12 for a child. Go to thevic.co.nz.
There's no good reason for missing out on Laneway 2019. But if for some bad, terrible, no good reason you can't make it, well, never fear, 95BFM's got you sussed.
We'll be spending the whole day on location in beautiful Albert Park, broadcasting Laneway on air and online at 95BFM.com.
95BFM live from Laneway 2019, thanks to Tiger Crystal. Tiger Crystal is the ultimate refreshment for Auckland's hottest festival, January 28th, Auckland Anniversary Day.
Hakarongo mai, it's Māori words, because he waka eke noa.
Te pahi, the boss.
Hey, can you look over this account for me, please? There's something weird up with it.
Sure thing. You're te pahi.
Springsteen is te pahi. I'm just a friend that gets paid more than you do.
Oh.
Te pahi, the boss.
Māori words, karawhiua. Give it a go.
Mary? What are you doing here?
Hi, Janet. I'm looking for the summer program. What are you doing here? You look like you've been under the shower.
You're right, I have. Tonight was the first night of my new exercise course. It was fun, but not easy. I'm sure I used up a lot of calories tonight.
Outfits cut the victim's throat, collected the gushing blood in jars, and spilled it over the altar. The perfume of incense mixed with the odors of congealed blood and roasted meat, while swarms of black flies buzzed just about everywhere. See, for example, Numbers chapter 28, Deuteronomy chapter 12, and 1 Samuel chapter 2. A modern Jewish family that celebrates a holiday by having a barbecue on their front lawn is much closer to the spirit of biblical times than an Orthodox family that spends the time studying scriptures in a synagogue. Theist religions, such as biblical Judaism, justified the agricultural economy through new cosmological myths. Animist religions had previously depicted the universe as a grand Chinese opera with a limitless cast of colorful actors. Elephants and oak trees, crocodiles and rivers, mountains and frogs, ghosts and fairies, angels and demons, each had a role in the cosmic opera. Theist religions rewrote the script, turning the universe into a bleak Ibsen drama with just two main characters, man and God. The angels and demons somehow survived the transition, becoming the messengers and servants of the great gods. Yet the rest of the animist cast, all the animals, plants, and other natural phenomena, were transformed into silent decor. True, some animals were considered sacred to this or that god, and many gods had animal features. The Egyptian god Anubis had the head of a jackal, and even Jesus Christ was frequently depicted as a lamb. Yet ancient Egyptians could easily tell the difference between Anubis and an ordinary jackal sneaking into the village to hunt chickens, and no Christian butcher ever mistook the lamb under his knife for Jesus. We normally think that theist religions sanctified the great gods. We tend to forget that they sanctified humans too. Hitherto, Homo sapiens had been just one actor in a cast of thousands. In the new theist drama, sapiens became the central hero around whom the entire universe revolved. The gods, meanwhile, were given two related roles to play. Firstly, they explained what is so special about sapiens and why humans should dominate and exploit all other organisms. Christianity, for example, maintained that humans hold sway over the rest of creation because the Creator charged them with that authority. Moreover, according to Christianity, God gave an eternal soul only to humans. Since the fate of this eternal soul is the point of the whole Christian cosmos, and since animals have no soul, they are mere extras. Humans thus became the apex of creation, while all other organisms were pushed to the sidelines. Secondly, the gods had to mediate between humans and the ecosystem. In the animistic cosmos, everyone talked with everyone directly. If you needed something from the caribou, the fig trees, the clouds, or the rocks, you addressed them yourself. In the theist cosmos, all non-human entities were silenced. Consequently, you could no longer talk with trees and animals. What to do then, when you wanted the trees to give more fruits, the cows to give more milk, the clouds to bring more rain, and the locusts to stay away from your crops? That's where the gods entered the picture. They promised to supply rain, fertility, and protection, provided humans did something in return. This was the essence of the agricultural deal. The gods safeguarded and multiplied farm production, and in exchange, humans had to share the produce with the gods. This deal served both parties, at the expense of the rest of the ecosystem. Today in Nepal, devotees of the goddess Godimai celebrate her festival every 5 years in the village of Bariapur. A record was set in 2009 when 250,000 animals were sacrificed to the goddess. A local driver explained to a visiting British journalist that if we want anything and we come here with an offering to the goddess, within 5 years all our dreams will be fulfilled. Much of theist mythology explains the subtle details of this deal. The Mesopotamian Gilgamesh epic recounts that when the gods sent a great deluge to destroy the world, almost all humans and animals perished. Only then did the rash gods realize that nobody remained to make any offerings to them. They became crazed with hunger and distress. Luckily, one human family survived, thanks to the foresight of the god Enki, who instructed his devotee Utnapishtim to take shelter in a large wooden ark along with his relatives and a menagerie of animals. When the deluge subsided and this Mesopotamian Noah emerged from his ark, the first thing he did was sacrifice some animals to the gods. Then, tells the epic, all the great gods rushed to the spot. The gods smelled the savor. The gods smelled the sweet savor. The gods swarmed like flies around the offering. The biblical story of the deluge, written more than 1,000 years after the Mesopotamian version, also reports that immediately upon leaving the ark, Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, "Never again will I curse the ground because of humans." Genesis chapter 8, verses 20 and 21. This deluge story became a founding myth of the agricultural world. It is possible, of course, to give it a modern environmentalist spin. The deluge could teach us that our actions can ruin the entire ecosystem, and humans are divinely charged with protecting the rest of creation. Yet traditional interpretations saw the deluge as proof of human supremacy and animal worthlessness. According to these interpretations, Noah was instructed to save the whole ecosystem in order to protect the common interests of gods and humans rather than the interests of the animals.
BFM News Headlines.
Art Maria, here's your news coming up at 10. More people have joined the hunger strike for detainees at an Australian detention centre. Members of Venezuela's National Guard have been arrested following an attempted revolt. And Google has been fined 44 million euros following a breach of data protection regulations. These stories in full coming up at 10.
A breach? Just the one breach, you think?
It's probably several, eh?
They knew we were going to say that, though. They probably taught us to say that. All right, and coming up on the wire this morning, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, that's not this morning, it's the afternoon, isn't it? Yeah, 12 o'clock, midday? Noon.
Time is important.
High noon.
It's going to be a packed show, as always, of course. We've got more Brexit news, because does Brexit ever end? So, you know, I think Mary Margaret's role is pretty much going to be exclusively just a Brexit correspondent, as opposed to
She'll be sent back with Brexits.
Yeah.
Like rickets, but yeah. With Brexits.
And, it's contagious.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing. Interesting just watching it all play out, but at the same time, not interesting at all.
But we'll try and make it interesting. Don't say it's not.
Our Prime Minister's over there, yes, exactly. And that seems to have worked. That seems to have, all report by all accounts, that some...
But she's also meeting with a lot of EU people, so she's not exactly going to be exclusively there. We're also talking, hopefully going to be talking to someone about the fallout from this Roastbusters story that played on the TV last night. Why was it on the news? We're going to try and talk to someone to talk about whether that was a really dumb idea or not. And then also...
Yeah. I didn't see it, but Tess was showing me some little bits and bobs from it. Weren't you, Tess? Have you shown to pass that on to the news team? You should have a look at some of the...
And then also stuff, the news sources being sold. So I'm going to try and speak to some sort of media commentator about how significant that could be for the rest of the media landscape in New Zealand.
What sort of person buys stuff?
Exactly. Yeah. Who just decides they want to buy it? Yeah. Do you want to buy it?
I don't know. I guess someone who can see, someone who's got a keen eye and thinking, we can monetize that.
And do they cut out all the print stuff and just keep the website because that's what makes money?
What is stuff... In total, then, you mean like...
It's what used to be Fairfax, so including all the regional newspapers
stuff
and Dominion
Post. Stuff covers all that.
Yeah.
Right.
So, does anyone want to buy a whole lot of regional newspapers in 2019, or do they just want to buy the website?
It can be very influential, a regional newspaper. I still like the Central Leader. Is that still going?
The other week, though, they had the same story on the front page 2 days in a row.
Doesn't matter.
It was the same shooting, and I saw a post on Twitter being like, wow, two shootings in the same street in the same week.
Sometimes you'll find the best stories, and you'll find better stories than that than the Herald sometimes.
Don't deny that.
Just stories that you care about more. All right. Okay, but that's at 12 o'clock today on The Wire. Flagship show when it comes to current affairs, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Whoops, Lizzie.
BFM presents Julian Baker.
I didn't save that. I cut out where that was. Julian Baker at the Tuning Fork. Friday, 15th of February.
Thank you. questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
Yay, learning, yay, for learning, woohoo. My guest this morning is Nathan Considine. How are you?
I'm good, I'm good.
Now, you're from the Faculty of Medical Health and Sciences, yeah. Psychological Medicine.
I'm from PsychMed.
That's quite nice to be interesting.
Yeah, it's a great place. It's a great place.
We're going to talk about translating the science of emotions into the health context.
That's right.
What do you mean? What's that all about? I mean, surely, emotions and health go hand in hand. It's like, what are you so happy about? Oh, I feel good. I feel shit. I'm crying or something.
I mean, that's true, and they are closely tied up. The thing that makes it interesting for me is that in medicine, emotions get studied completely independently from what we know in basic science.